action and give me a beat. Ouch! Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce the hi-hat. Go on. That's good. Now the tambourine. Right now.
I'm Ro in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. We have a busy show for you today. We'll hear from Pamela Badilla in Hudson about the sale of a Warren Street building impacting the arts, and Alan Robb from New York Public Interest Research Group about the Hudson River. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local better weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is Mitch Easter of Sneakers, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Take two.
The Athens Cultural Center is pleased to host the third Saturday's free film series at the Athens Riverfront Park along the Hudson River. Join us on the third Saturday of each month, May through September, for a stellar movie lineup with notable guests. Screenings begin at sunset, but get there early to enjoy thematic specialty cocktails from the Stewart House's River Grill and settle in with friends on the lawn. Visit AthensCulturalCenter.org for more information, including this year's featured films. Third Saturday's free film series is made possible by Create Council on the Arts, the Fair Games Arts Grant, and the Stewart House Tavern and River Grill. See you this summer!
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The Hudson Valley Picture Show Traveling Series brings cinema to locations around the region. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the Community Theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Leah Bertucci of Ridgewood, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, September 8th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that Huntertown Supervisor Sean Mahoney addressed the Greene County Legislature's Health Services Committee meeting September 6th on behalf of the six other Mountaintop supervisors and two mayors, requesting that county officials consider a countywide ambulance system. Mahoney said, quote, "This could put all EMS coverage under one umbrella, reducing the cost to municipalities and increasing the effectiveness of our advanced life support and basic life support providers," unquote. A task force for the legislature considered the idea in 2014, but there was not enough support. Now Mahoney wants a new task force. Green County Emergency Services says EMS agencies were dispatched in 8,672 times in 2022, up from 8,284 in 2021 and 7,323 in 2020. Legislators Matthew Lavera of Catskill and Harry Lennon from Cairo both said they supported the idea of an independent committee to look at the issue. Mahoney said, quote, "We need to take a look at the whole picture and figure out if this is the right way, and if not, let's figure out the right way," unquote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Philip Pantuso reports in the Times Union that on August 6th, the Saugerties Town Board tabled a motion to deny, quote, "any and all," unquote, requests and appeals under the New York's Freedom of Information Law for records about resignations and retirements in the town and village of Saugerties. The State Committee on Open Government says that, if passed, that would violate state laws governing public records. Towns can block Freedom of Information Law requests for, quote, "an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy," unquote, but cannot create a blanket exception to rights of access for personnel records, according to Kristen O'Neill, assistant director with the State Committee on Open Government. She said, quote, "In our opinion, a policy to deny any and all FOIL requests and FOIL appeals pertaining to records of resignations and retirements without conducting a review of each of the relevant records to determine whether disclosure would, in each instance, constitute an unwarranted invasion of privacy is inconsistent with an agency's obligations under the law," unquote. Less than a month ago, Saugerties Police Chief Joseph Sinagra retired. At the time, he was suspended while the Ulster County District Attorney's Office investigated sexual assault and harassment allegations against an officer and the department's handling of those allegations. Saugerties Council Member Mike Evino would not say whether the issue was about Sinagra, but did say, quote, "As far as releasing these records, if we set a precedent, it might impact future communications. We're protecting employees' confidentiality," unquote. Read more about the story in the Times Union. Diane Pinero-Zucker reports in the Daily Freeman that the activist group Scenic Hudson held a press conference with Representative Mark Molinaro, a Republican, and Representative Pat Ryan, a Democrat, September 7th at Stone Ridge Orchard in Ulster County in support of the Farm Bill. That congressional legislation is reintroduced and adopted every 5 years, including this one. Julie Teague, president of the New York League of Conservation Voters, said, quote, "This is an opportunity we get every 5 years to make sure we're supporting healthy food for all people, we're uplifting rural communities and economies and securing good water quality and addressing those challenges posed by climate change," unquote. Molinaro, who represents the 19th Congressional District, said, quote, "We are in the midst of one of the most important American policies of our lifetime. We're facing, farmers know that this firsthand, some significant challenges," unquote. Ryan explained how difficult it will be to get the Farm Bill passed. Quote, "It's going to require, on a personal level, folks like Mark and I coming together and saying, how do we get over the line? It's a 5-seat margin in a divided government. It's going to take those personal connections to bring the seriousness we need to get this over the line," unquote. Much of the Farm Bill is about helping poor people get enough nutrition. Molinaro acknowledged the need for supplemental food support, but criticized states, including some red states, who he said have become, quote, "really good at processing payments and less good at empowering independence," unquote. Ryan, on the other hand, said that the Farm Bill, quote, "is the bill in which we decide who goes hungry in the country and who doesn't, and that is a point of significant debate," unquote, between Democrats and Republicans. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, September 8th. Local early morning temperatures range from 63 degrees in Tannersville to 67 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 75 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium and should come down over the weekend. A calm and foggy morning with a break in the rain is just a fake out. The afternoon will not fall under a heat advisory, but it comes close to it. We get a high temperature of 85 at 1 p.m. That lingers most of the afternoon. Around 2 p.m., chances for a replay of yesterday come right back. Another round of isolated to widespread storms are expected. Make sure your prep is in place. Have a couple gallons of drinking water ready for each member of the household. Charge up your communication devices. Secure anything that may be loose in your yard. The rain gets more intense near dark and lasts all night. We see a low of 68, but again, it will be muggy. Tomorrow, rain is expected all day, and we get a high of 81 at 2 p.m. Overnight, more rain, low of 67. Sunday, it gets a tad cooler. A high of only 77 is expected, but you guessed it, it will be rainy all day, especially in the afternoon. Monday, high of 77 and more rain. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:17 a.m., high tide at 10:48 a.m., low tide at 5:14 p.m., and high tide, once again, at 11:10 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 76.4 degrees, and the tide strength will be very low. Sunset today will be at 7:06 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:24 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be slow at 339 kilometers per second with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 135, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
This is deprogramming from the Universal Media Network.
Yesterday's another. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You want people representing us as a nation who are in line with your beliefs, whether or not they're representing your interests specifically or your district specifically.
Sarah Briner with Open Secrets says all politics is local, but increasingly all local politics is national. Social media and polarization are drawing national attention and boosting candidates' ability to fundraise from out-of-state donors. Briner says just half the donations made to Senate candidates come from their states, with only a little more than that for House contenders. A new CNN poll is bad news for the White House. President Joe Biden's approval rating dropped below 40% for the first time this year. Recent head-to-head polls show Biden basically tied with former President Donald Trump, but former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is pointing out this new survey shows her as the only Republican beating the president.
I think he thought it'd be cute to stick with the Bidenomics. But the reality is, if you want to bring down inflation, there's a couple of things that will do it. Stop the spending.
Top brass are calling on Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville to end his months-long hold on hundreds of military appointments. Secretary of the Air Force Frank Kendall says the senator's objection to the military's abortion policy is impacting national security.
Our potential adversaries are paying attention to this and is affecting how they view the United States and our military capabilities and support for the military. This needs to stop.
Secretary of the Army Christine Wormuth says Tuberville's opposition to any nominees who support diversity and equity programs will impact military recruitment.
You know, it is taking our apolitical military institution, that's a core principle of our constitutional democracy, and eroding its foundation.
Three of the six military services are now without Senate-confirmed leaders for the first time in history. Tuberville has repeatedly said he's not budging. Wisconsin Republicans are looking to impeach a newly elected state Supreme Court justice over donations she got from the Democratic Party. Democratic State Representative Greta Neubauer says Republicans didn't mind when their party donated to the court's conservative judges.
Every legislator must look in the mirror and ask whether they are willing to erase the votes of over a million Wisconsinites, including their own constituents.
Justice Janet Protasiewicz won in a landslide and gave liberals a court majority for the first time in a decade and a half. That's boosting Democrats' hopes of overturning the state's abortion ban and gerrymandered legislative maps, which could weaken the legislature's GOP majority. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh told a judicial conference Thursday he hopes there will be concrete steps soon on the court's ethics concerns, but he stopped short of endorsing an official code of conduct. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. June 25th was the 10th anniversary of Shelby County versus Holder, a U.S. Supreme Court decision gutting a key provision of the Voting Rights Act. What was this decision about, and how has it contributed to the erosion of our democracy? Decades of systemic racist voter suppression and violence spurred passage of the 1965 Voting Rights Act, outlawing discrimination in voting on the basis of race and enforcing the 15th Amendment. Section 5 of the VRA created pre-clearance requirements for states, counties, or municipalities with a history of voter discrimination. It required them to clear any new election rules with the U.S. Justice Department. But in 2012, Shelby County, Alabama, argued to the U.S. Supreme Court that Section 5 was unconstitutional. Instead, the court ruled that the formula used to apply preclearance was outdated and asked Congress for an update. Congress hasn't acted, so Section 5 has been unenforceable since 2013. The decision greenlighted a resurgence of voter suppression bills in conservative-leaning states with large black or Hispanic populations. Among the shady tactics are reductions in polling places, shortening of early voting, attempting to stop voter registration drives, narrowing voter ID options, and even preventing the handing out of food and water to voters forced to wait in long lines, all making it harder for our fellow Americans to vote. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
And so we're here with our next guest, the, somewhat duplicated, never replicated, the one and the only.
The one and only.
The
absolutely.
One and the only. No stranger to our show. She's been coming on over the years and just a very a jewel, a prize of our community. We're very blessed and by God to have her. And so this is none other than Ma Pamela Badilla. And
hello.
Hi, Pam. How are you today?
Hello, hello. Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be here again. Thank you. Thank you. How are y'all doing? Very well, I hope.
Yes, doing well. You know, the downside of being on radio is people can't see our beautiful guests, you know. And I tell you, if there's a fountain in youth, you drink from it. You know, you absolutely drink from it. You haven't
aged. I can't see me, so it's okay.
You haven't aged since I met you 25, 30 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. I feel it on the inside, though. I'll be 70 next year.
What?
Girl, I feel every minute of it.
Well, you would never know it.
We have to do a show on aging gracefully. How about that? All right. So, but we have some business at hand that we wanted to, you know, have a conversation with to inform and educate and enlighten, you know, our audience and our community, and to shine some light on the work that is being done and the threat to the work that's being done. And so, well, first of all, let me rewind. Before we get into that,
yes,
there are some people who may just be visiting our show for the first time, and this perchance came on to it, and they don't know you. All right. So can you just give us a 60-second self-introduction for those who don't know who you are? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am Pamela Badilla, and I am one of the founders and directors, now the present director of Diata Diata International Folkloric Theater. And our family-based ensemble is a production company designed to help build and promote the dynamics of community. Being a global citizen and Pan-African, I believe that we must acknowledge a lot of what we do not know, which means learning about the world that we are living in before we could even acclimate as full citizens, because we can't just feel like we're part of a whole global community and not really understand what's going on around it. So what I try to do locally and otherwise is through my work as a storyteller, writing and producing theater, and as an instructor, I like to teach people how to seek each other, to how to vibe with each other, to how to learn and be informed by truth, and put truth to the power of building their personality, building their integrity, their character, and then through that, becoming a stronger and more viable citizen of the world. And so I do this through many programs of art and instruction and through the theater, and mainly just through my presence with my family, because we lead by example. And so we show a family that's united, even though we have our differences, and that we go through this community bringing the ensemble under of love, honor, and respect everywhere we go, whether we agree or disagree. We learn to disagree most reverently with the respect that we owe the person who is also a fellow global citizen. So through humility, respect, and understanding, we try to build this world.
Well, you know, you said that you'll be reaching that 310 mark next year. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for those of us who are coming up behind that, who are still working on that, because, you know, B.C. Kim, she be trying to come up sometime, you know what I'm saying?
There are moments where I feel like, wait a minute, I need to move a little bit slower. What am I trying to do running around here with these kids? But, you know, something about purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Just find the energy and the will. It makes mm-hmm. you know you must, because I don't know how many more moments I have here, but I realize the work is very vital and that I've been given the grace of energy, commitment, and resolve. And so I just engage those as long as I can.
Mm-hmm. That's
right. We have 10 children, 16 grandchildren, a great grand, and everybody's aligned with mm-hmm. that concept that we have to represent by who we are, how this world ought to be. And even though we're not always good at everything we do, the fact remains we are focused and aligned with seeing these wars stopping and people stop this hating, ridiculous wasting of time, when the focus of becoming a proper world citizen is not so hard. We mm-hmm. just have to become more humble about who we are mm-hmm. with rapport who others are, and mm-hmm. not to be so judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I'd like to believe
amen,
that.
Amen.
Well, I just want to say, I would like to believe that, you know, being committed to, you know, your purpose and your family and righteous causes keeps you young.
Ah, it must be, because I keep hearing that. And I used to say, because my hair's not wrapped today, but when I wrap it and someone says that to me, I always retort with, you know, all my wrinkles are kind of tucked up under my wrap, my gaiter. So if I take it down, it'd be like, boom, you know, you'll see. And I even sometimes try to visualize how that would look, and I just try to shudder and take it back. But it's because I have to do what I have to do. It's like, it's the work that when my husband left, it's been 11 years, and we were working on that together. We still work on it. I still am married in my mind. In our culture, this is a soulmate. So I'm staying as I would if he was still here. I respect and honor him as if he were still here, because that is a guiding and very committed type of reunion where we all, and the children are devoted to it too. They understand through all the different aspects of our work here, like my daughter with the farming and with the art, and this one here with the music. And everybody has something that they're bringing to make the whole ensemble be a very, very fortified showing of, this is how a world community can build. Just bring what you have and make that be part of making a beautiful picture that others can be painting into it also. And not be so constrained with what I think has got to be the way and what I believe has to be the thought. You know, and around the world, we're seeing a lot of people realizing that's not the way. Like, let's talk about later what's going on in Africa, which is where I focus a lot of my attentions, because I plan to move, you know, partially to Africa. And I realize more and more people over there are recognizing and picking it up, you know, really, that, yeah, they're changing that whole narrative. It's not like it was at all, especially French speaking.
Well, I tell you, there's a movement going on for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, what was going on that I was like, we got to have this conversation on the radio show. Okay, so you reached out to me to let me know about, you know, something that's happening that's going to have, if it goes through, it's going to have some impact and repercussions for the community and the work that you all have been doing and are doing through the Diada Folklore Theater and at the Hudson Youth Clubhouse. So for those who are not aware of what's going on, tell us about the Hudson Youth Clubhouse. What is it, and where is it, and why is it, you know?
Well, right now, we're located temporarily, according to our agreement with the agreement with the people who did the leasing. It's temporary here at 11 Warren Street, the former Co-Arc building. And I have a great concern, and I did write this letter to send out to the community of Hudson. I would read it if you'd like. That it really stipulates that I am concerned as a community member and as director of Diata Data, the International Folkloric Theater. We work with people. We produce many plays, 16 in fact, very large productions, each time bringing in casts of multi-ethnic members and the team of everybody behind the play, inside the play, all around the play, supporting the play, realizing that we're a global community and try to build relations. This clubhouse was the third space we had since we started up the street. And then that rent was too high. We couldn't stay there. Then it was downstairs in the building of MHA. And then that had to end. Now it was over here in a temporary placement with a short lease and then a monthly continuation. So the building was sold. And it was sold to the Columbia County Board of Supervisors. And we were, you know, I got back from California, surprising my grandson for his first birthday. And I learned of the sale. I saw the article. And I immediately understood that that meant we would no longer have a place where we had built since July of last year, a very strong, bonded community resource center where people from all different organizations have come here and had events, including strong personal rapport with the young people here, because they're invited to come to some of these events, you know, that were generally geared toward community. And, you know, the Bindlestiff Circus rehearses here. We've had Strengthening Families, huge Thanksgiving dinner here. We cooked it for 55 people with our Cooking Conversations Club. We have many, many programs and activities going on here that speak to the need of the children who live high-rise, low-rise terrace. They live so close they could walk here in less than 10 minutes. And it's spacious. We have a whole sewing room here. where they're learning how to make things that they can actually use. There's a music room. We have ensemble percussion. We have cooking here. We have yoga here. We have physical fitness and training using the services of very much, certified instructors. We have the kids learning how to make art and then monetize themselves by sale of their art. So it kind of diminishes the idea of going out in these streets and compromising their freedom. We also have discussion groups where they can, you know, basically express themselves in such a way as they can have their feelings understood and perhaps really appreciated, rather than this constant trend I find when they're caught for what word to say, they start cussing each other out rather than learning how to disagree or even to agree in words that really bend your mind to what's really on my mind, because you can listen to me through my vocabulary. And so what is going on here basically is the board of supervisors' decision through their vote to use this for office space and storage of voting machines and whatever else they had in plan, which would mean we would not be able to keep the clubhouse here. And it's true. We knew the building was going to be sold. It was not a surprise. And we also knew that whoever buys it can do pretty much what they want. That's understandable. What we're doing is saying to the board of supervisors, who are elected officials and who are here to serve the community of Columbia County, that to reconsider their decision would be in the best interest of everyone, because we have been here in a way building something that was not even expected to get this big or this important to so many people, and has become a very viable, very much thriving space that everybody who comes here has found to be a remarkable opportunity to grow the community and build the children's confidence and their basic feeling of themselves belonging to something that they never had before. There's nothing like this in the city of Hudson, where they can come in and spend hours knowing this is their space. It is in their community, and we do things here are relative to them. We have Gunga teaching fishing and boxing, and we have people teaching drumming and dancing, and I mean theater. We produced a play here last spring, written and directed by teens right here, and they brought up such very positive concepts about respect, you know, and acknowledging each other as equals in a global citizenry. And they brought up into that same play the understanding of true friendship rather than bonding with people because they have something that you can get out of them, you know. So we're learning that these children are teaching us as much as we teach them, is because we have developed a relationship through this place that gives them a sense of, you know, pride, a sense of confidence, a sense of knowing that we can reciprocally help each other. And then we have other organizations. Backpack International had their dinner party here. We had our reception for the Tanzania tour, people who went on that trip last January to visit the motherland. We had that here. And Happy Bellies had their huge a Halloween party here. I mean, many, many events go on where people can feel, wow, we come to this space, it's wide, it's open, it's hospitable, it's generous, and there's never any charge at being involved because it's a space that they're all welcome to. We want to hold on to it. We don't want it to have to change to the level of just offices and storage space, where in fact there are other places in Hudson that could be visited for that, including John L. Edwards School, among others. And we were hoping that the Board of Supervisors would take the time to an initiative to research those ideas rather than maintain their initial perspective of shutting this down and using it for that.
Pablo, good.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Chris McKenna reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that a group calling itself New York Citizens Audit is going to the homes of New Yorkers and questioning their voter registration status. Officials are concerned because in some encounters, the group appears to be posing as Board of Election workers and in other cases telling people they have committed a felony by registering to vote in two places. Raymond Riley III, the State Board of Elections co-executive director, said in a statement, and I quote, "We are extremely alarmed by these actions. These individuals are impersonating government officials in an effort to intimidate voters based on inaccurate and misleading information," end quote. Marley Hornick, executive director of New York Citizens Audit, says her group is not pretending to be election workers. And I quote, "Absolutely not. We're researchers who use lawful methods," end quote. There has been little evidence of any voter fraud in recent elections in New York and nationally. The group has reportedly approached voters in Albany County, but not in Greene or Columbia counties. William Van Ness, Warren County's Republican Election Commissioner, said he fears that the visits to voters' homes might discourage people from voting. He said, and I quote, "We want people to vote. We work exceptionally hard to do that," end quote. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. Kate Lisa reports for New York State of Politics that as school reopens this year, New York faces a 15% statewide shortage of school bus drivers. David Christopher, executive director of the State Association for Pupil Transportation, said, and I quote, "The situation is dire. We just did a poll, and 80% of our members said they're short of drivers and we need to recruit more," end quote. The legislature recently addressed the issue, passing legislation to allow New Yorkers 18 to 20 years old with a driver's license to obtain a Class A commercial driver's license if they complete the state's new training program for young adults. Assemblyperson Bill Magnorelli said, and I quote, "Everybody is trying to do whatever they can to get more people with a CDL license. That's number one. It's something that is a priority for lawmakers. We want to make sure that all the children are safe and that they get to school because that's where we want them," end quote. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Andrea Mayo reports in Porcupine Sioux that someone defaced the four pillars of the Greene County Courthouse in Catskill with the letters S-E-E-N overnight September 5th. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said, and I quote, "It's not art, it's not self-expression, it's vandalism," end quote. And Groden's team failed to clean the pillars on its first attempt. Groden said, and I quote, "Research suggested to use mineral oils as a less abrasive solution that won't cause decolorization than the spray paint. Now we will move to acid waste. After that, perhaps sanding down the stone, but that will certainly result in complete damage to the viewshed," end quote. Security cameras could not make out faces, officials said, implying more than one culprit. The Beetle Powers Place, a historic 1837 Greek Revival mansion in Catskill, also had the letter V spray-painted on a sign. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the Donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days.
Well, on Friday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 1 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 65 degrees. On Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 69 degrees. And on Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 81 degrees. And on Saturday night, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 2 a.m. Then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 67 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Guest with us, And we haven't met personally, but we've spoken over the telephone. I came across actually one of the organizations I'm with, Columbia County Women's Alliance. One of the leaders of that organization had sent out an email with an article, and so her name was attached to the article. She corrected me that she was not the author of the article. I think Gordon Edwards was the writer. But in sending this out, we had opportunity to have a conversation that, you know, we just knew we needed to bring to this platform and share with our community. So without further ado, I do want to present, introduce to some, present to others, Ms. Ann Rabe. She's the Environmental Policy Director with the New York Public Interest Research Group. Mm-hmm. Welcome, and hi, Ann. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thanks for inviting me, Kim and Randall. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so we also like to give our guests an opportunity to just give like a 60-second self-introduction about who Ann Rabe is. And if you can avoid the trap of telling us about what you do, because we're going to get into that, but just a little something that our audience might not know looking at your LinkedIn. You know, who is Ann Rabe? What can you tell us?
Well, sure. I come from upstate New York, south of Rochester, a little tiny town called Geneseo. I went to SUNY Albany and stayed in Albany. And I got involved in environmental issues because I was basically a whistleblower. I was working for a lawyer who was representing a polluting company that, polluted the workers and the community with radioactive uranium.
Oh.
And so I left that lawyer, started working with a volunteer community group to get a cleanup of that uranium factory. And it took 27 years, but we eventually got it cleaned up. And then I got involved. I worked for the Assembly for a while, Assemblyman Dick Godfrey from Manhattan. And then I worked for national and statewide environmental health, environmental justice organizations. So that's my snapshot background. I basically started out as a grassroots organizer, and I still volunteer, Kim and Randall. I have a Superfund dump about 2 miles down the road I work on, and another radioactive waste dump, etc. So, but that's one of the reasons I got involved with Indian Point and the whole tritium wastewater issue. And want to say quickly, I really commend Governor Hochul for signing that ban discharge bill into law. It was wonderful.
Yes, it was. And snaps and claps for that. Amen, amen. So, okay, so Governor Hochul signed the bill, and we're going to get into okay, that hurdle was jumped, you know, but there's other hurdles ahead. But for those who are not even aware, like myself, I was not even aware of this situation, you know. So the article that you shared brought this issue to my knowledge. So tell the people about the bullet that we just dodged when Governor Hochul signed her bill. Let's talk about the bullet we just dodged.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Right. So, yeah, so the in Westchester County, in the town of Buchanan, along the Hudson River, there are 3 closed nuclear power plants or nuclear reactors, Indian Point 1, 2, and 3. And they started, Consolidated Edison built them starting back in 1961, I believe, is the first one. But it was definitely in the mid-60s, Indian Point 1 started. And for 59 years, these 3 reactors off and on ran. And, you know, they were basically providing energy. They for those 59 years, there was concerns because there wasn't a lot of oversight from the government. And I say that because I don't know if people are aware of this, but you know, they built 2 of the reactors in the 1960s. The Environmental Protection Agency and our state Department of Environmental Conservation were not created until 1970.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, so they were basically setting up operations with highly radioactive materials, uranium and plutonium. I mean, things that are like deadly. And, you know, I'd be concerned about the workers back then. I'd be concerned about what happened in terms of possible spills, et cetera. So that's one of the concerns, I guess, is that these 3 closed reactors are now undergoing what they call decommissioning. They're basically dismantling them. And again, you know, reactors, it's hard to understand, but basically they use uranium in fuel rods that heat up the water and create the energy. And those fuel rods become, when they're spent after so many years, and they're spent, they're highly radioactive, and they put them into a swimming pool to cool them down because they are so hot, they would automatically combust, you know? They're so hot. So they put them into a swimming pool. There are three swimming pools at the Indian Point site of these spent fuel rods from those three reactors, highly radioactive. And in the process, the decades that those fuel rods are being cooled down, they pollute the water, especially with tritium, which is a radioactive substance, tritium, that, like any radioactive substance, it's a cancer-causing agent. Any exposure to radiation is an increased risk of cancer. It's also a mutagen. It causes mutations in fetuses, developing fetuses. And with tritium, the worst thing about it going into the Hudson River, which we, thankfully the governor stopped, but the worst thing about it is that it changes, it's a water molecule, it's a radioactive water, hydrogen water molecule. So it basically organically bioaccumulates. And so basically if you put it into the water, it's going to contaminate the sediment, it's going to get into the fish, it's going to get into the wildlife. So people, like a pregnant woman eating tritium contaminated fish from the Hudson River, that would directly impact her and her baby. It's a hazardous substance, and it shouldn't have even been considered by Holtec, who owns Indian Point reactors, shouldn't even be considered to discharge it in the Hudson River. So there was a huge campaign in the last year to stop Holtec from discharging millions of gallons of this tritium contaminated wastewater from those swimming pools that had the spent fuel rods. I hope that wasn't too complicated, but that's the gist of the problem on the wastewater.
Now, is this a normal process that they do, and had they done it before?
Yes, they were allowed in the past to have regular discharges, smaller discharges of tritium wastewater. For the 59 years they operated, they had smaller discharges. We don't even know the test results of this tritium wastewater, but we have looked. Holtec runs the Pilgrim nuclear reactor, which is also being decommissioned in Massachusetts. And we looked at the test results of their wastewater, and the tritium levels and the toxic chemical levels are significant. So it's definitely very polluted wastewater.
Wow.
And so basically we were left, I think, in a very bad situation, New York State and the state agencies, because the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they're the ones that they say yay or nay to Holtec and what they can do during decommissioning. And the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is a promoter of nuclear power. They're not an environmental agency. They're not a health agency. All they do is promote and regulate decommissioning of these reactors. And so they don't have good safeguards. They don't have good guardrails. They're not, you know, their main priority is whatever Holtec wants to do, as long as it's within our you know, standards, which are very unprotective, it's okay with us. And that's why, you know, that's why 400,000 people signed the petitions and contacted the governor and said, this is unacceptable. And over 300 organizations and said, this is unacceptable. And the legislators introduced the banned discharge bill because of the lack of safety and environmental protection from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, from the federal government agency.
And one of the things that I found really interesting was, you know, and for the average person who might not be up to date on all of the implications of some of the things they were presenting, so I said, okay, they're going to do it in measures that, you know, aren't hazardous, you know, and they're going to stretch it out over a long period of time, and, you know, and this is what they're going to bring to the community. And so for an uninformed person, you know, that argument might, you know, kind of work, except that when you think about it, A, is deadly stuff to begin with, And then, okay, so the first dump, you know, may not have an immediate impact, but when you get to the second or the third dump, then, you know, you have this issue. And, oh, we never thought that would happen. Or what about our children and our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren who inherit the problem? So, you know, so I just wanted to get that out there as well. Because sometimes, you know, with our media and the way, you know, people will spin things, even the people who say, you know, this is a no spin zone, you know, there's still a spin sometimes, you know. And so we dodged that bullet. You know, people stepped up, spoke up, and they wrote in, and the governor, you know, put the, what is it, kibosh on it? Let me stop making up this Yiddish word, you know.
Kibosh. But, I think kibosh.
Kibosh. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So, but now we still have this waste that has to be dealt with. What, you know, how do we get ready for the next hurdle, the next obstacle? And what are the safe ways to get